Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Indianapolis, Indiana, welcome to the Crossroads Sports Radio Show, presented by Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Crossroads Sports Radio, episode number 122, here on a lovely Wednesday, July 8th. I'm your host, Brandon Reif. Going to be joined very shortly by my main man, Jonathan Birdsong, the co-captain, the guy that sits in that pilot seat with me. We're going to have him on momentarily. Mr. Jonathan Birdsong, JB, how are you, my buddy?
Good afternoon, Brandon Reif and Crossroads fam. How are we doing this afternoon?
Not too bad. I probably sound very, very nasally or very disgusting to most people, I would say.
Oh man. I won't say disgusting, man, but I kind of allude to you finding a little ill bug during the pre-show, man. I told the fam that you're gonna use a trooper, man, and the show must go on. You're gonna power through. So here we are.
Yeah, I think I may have the corona, John. I may have it. Well, I don't know. I've got symptoms.
Uh-oh. Well.
So I've got an appointment tomorrow.
They got testing
around the city. I'm going in and getting tested.
Okay.
Tomorrow to get tested. So
man.
We'll see.
Do,
I'm hoping it's just a head cold.
If you do, yeah, this is that going around here, too.
Yeah, I think it's more of a head cold and allergies. I think that's a mix of what mine is. So that's what I'm hoping. So we'll see.
Yeah.
But I'm going to power through, John, so I may have you take the reins most of the evening, and I'll come through. I still got a real sore throat, but we've got a lot of topics tonight. We've got the NBA to talk about. We've got NASCAR and IndyCar just had their huge weekend here in Indianapolis. We've got NFL talk with people getting major contracts. We've got possible team name changes. We've got some college sports news. We've got a running back that was in the NFL, now that was the star of the Super Bowl, now wants out. So we got him. We got your favorite, the TBT tournament going on. The men of Mackey of Purdue just played yesterday, their second game. So we've got a lot of things to talk about to see. And we got golf, PGA Tour. We got PGA golf to talk about. We also have, John, talk about our special guest again we have this evening.
We have Coach. Put me on the spot, man. Flip my nose, man.
That's what
Coach
I do.
Thank you. Coach Catherine Mawai from Ball State University. Women's golf program will be on with us tonight. She's a two-time MAC, a Women's Head Golf Coach of the Year. I know golfers don't brag like basketball players and football players, but we're going to learn a lot about the women's side of the program, kind of like we learned a couple weeks ago with the men's side when we had Coach Fleck on. But we're going to learn a lot about the women's side of the program. She's long tenured there, 16-plus years at the university, and they're coming up on their season restart, you know. And like I said, we're going to learn a lot about Ball State University women's golf.
Yeah, I wonder, John. I'm going to ask her when we get her on. I'm going to ask her. I bet you she can beat Coach Fleck. We had Coach Fleck of the men's program on a couple weeks ago. I bet she's better than
Chris Starr.
I bet
trouble.
She is. I'm trying not to start trouble, but I bet you she's pretty good. I've looked at that resume. It's very decorated. Not saying that Coach Fleck isn't, but I bet they played on the course together before. They have to have.
The thing about it, though, Brandon, and like I said, we'll kind of bring it up when we get Coach Mawada on, man. It's like, how is this not a more of a known thing that Ball State got a golf program that's about something? That's the kind of thing that kind of like mind boggles me. You know, the program is you know, it flourished with national rankings. You know, saying both men's and women's pro size, and like I said, man, I get it, Brandon. As I am on my golfing journey, right? I get it that golf is not a braggart sport. I think we had DeChambeau this past weekend. Did I jack up his name? He won because he won the Classic in Detroit. He was kind of it's kind of like a brewing sports entertainment thing that he's got going on. What's the other golfer he's got? He's got like a little rivalry with. Is it Kopica?
Brooks Koepka?
Yeah, Brooks Koepka. Him and DeChambeau are having a little, you know, just a little Twitter, you know, Twitter battle, you know, social media, you know, chit chat, those kind of things, you know, draw in the drama field, you know what I'm saying, fans like me who don't necessarily like hardcore know, but like I said, like I kind of said, man, like the sport is growing, and like I said, I just can't, you know what I'm saying, you know, I can't believe that it's like kind of like a secret that it's not known that Ball State is so good with both their programs. So like I said, we're gonna learn a lot about the women's side tonight. Can't wait.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. you know, real quick on the PGA. By the way, Bryson DeChambeau, I believe I called that last week as my favorite to win that tournament. So just gonna go ahead and throw that out there now.
Well, he might have been too, man.
He
might have been due. He got like a top 10. He finished in the top 10 in like the last couple tournaments. So he was kind of.
He's averaging 350 yard drives. I mean, he's just stroking the ball out there. And I mean, when you've got that, and you only got about 90 yards, 90 to 100 yards in on a pitching wedge, you know, it makes golf a little bit easier. So, which is crazy. But yeah, so we've got that to talk about tonight. Should be a good time. But John, let's start out. We're gonna have Coach Mawat call us about 6:30. Is what we're looking like. So before then, let's go ahead, John. Let's hit the NBA. The biggest news out of the NBA. First, let's go locally. Indiana Pacers. Victor Oladipo has decided to sit out, but he will still go with the team down to Orlando. But he's going to sit out for this. John, to me, this is – we talked about it last show, how pissed I was if he'd be sitting out. Huge red flags for numerous reasons. I wrote an article on Crossroads website about Pacers fans. Go ahead and start. Don't be naive if you think Victor's going to stay with Indiana. All the writing is on the wall. He's leaving Indiana. The fact, John, it came out today that Mick McMillan said, I found out the same time you guys did that Victor wasn't playing, that Vic didn't even call the coach to let him know. Now, I can say one player leaving and having issues with communication is I blame on the player. But when it comes to two-star players, Paul George and then Victor Oladipo, with miscommunication with management, you got to start looking at the inner workings of your team. And is Kevin Pritchard the right guy if he's driving these guys out of here? But no, weird situation. Victor, it seems like he's distanced himself from the team, even though he says he's involved, which is another thing. But everything you see on is that he's going to be leaving after next year. And the Pacers might need to look at trade assets, is which I wrote in the article. But Vic not going down to Orlando. They leave Saturday, so.
You said something, man. It's a lot. There's a lot of layers to this particular deal with the Pacers and how it, you know what I'm saying, pertains to the restart. Paul George, kind of when I think about the Paul George situation, Larry Bird was in the background during Paul George's exit. Paul George is a Larry Bird guy. Kevin Pritchard was kind of running the show. I'm not going to say kind of. Kevin Pritchard was running the show. I think they had Larry Bird in for, like, scouting deals and, like, you know, what's the word I want to say? Larry Bird wasn't running the drafts or player movement. You know what I'm saying? He was in an advisory role. He's in the room, but he's in the advisory role. So there's a lot of trust you might have with team ownership and anybody else who's in management, but if your guy who plucked you, which is Larry Bird, who got Paul George out of, you know what I'm saying, from out of the draft, right? And this is, you know what I'm saying, this is a guy that you said you sent your team around or whatever, you know, when the transition of power, like Paul, I don't think Paul trusts the vision that Kevin Pritchard has for the Pacers. You see what I'm saying? And I don't think So I say that to say this, Brandon. I think Kevin Pritchard is a harder grader, if that's the word. It's not. I think Kevin Pritchard's a harder grader on players than Larry Bird is. Okay, so understand this. $21 million is what is the average salary for Victor Oladipo. Okay, he's living in that world right now. I don't necessarily have the numbers in front of me like what the Pacers offered him, but if it wasn't $30 million, it would be an embarrassment, because guys that he sandwiched in between, wing players, guards or shooting guards that he sandwiched in between, whether it be Jimmy Butler, who makes $32 million, and the kid out in Phoenix, a star player. Their star player, but they seem to can't win.
Booker.
He makes $27 million. Yes, he makes $27 million. Can you believe that? I get it that he dropped 60 and all that, but he makes $27 million, man, because of the way that, you know, I'm saying, teams want to keep their free agents. So that when their rookie contracts come up, man, they can give these guys, hey, man, stay here in Phoenix or stay in this medium market or the small market, right? So, you know, at least keep, you know what I'm saying, successful. So Victor Oladipo, again, if they didn't offer Victor Oladipo somewhere in the $30 million range per year, like I said, or average like 4 years, 5 years, a five-year deal to equal out $133 million total guaranteed, I would be – that's where the kind of the tear may have, you know what I'm saying, kind of started with Victor Oladipo and the Pacers. Thing about it is, man, ownership also tells whoever's running the Pacers, whether it be Larry Bird, Kevin Pritchard, hell, even go back to Bob Hill in the 80s, right? They tell everybody, man, we, like what Paul George said, we got overpaying for talent. So technically, man, on the championship team, Victor Oladipo's the number three. On this particular team, because of his great – Victor Oladipo is a great leader. I'm here to tell you, man, don't fall out, Brandon. Sorry. In talent for talent, Paul George versus Victor Oladipo, Paul George is a better player when healthy. When both are healthy and both are 100%, Paul George is a little bit better than Victor Oladipo. Because you know what? At least Paul George can say that he's pushed the team to a playoff win or two. You know what I'm saying? Victor Oladipo, man, floats on that bubble. I mean, your resume, I don't even like putting that pigeonhole on, but your resume is what your resume is, man. He did bounce back, so, oh, my God, Brandon, we can't be too, you know what I'm saying, cry for me, Argentina, for Victor. He was number two overall. He should have been number one in his draft. You see what I'm saying? I can't help the Brooklyn Nets chose a guy who washed out, but he should have been number two. He should have been number one all his draft, man. Victor Oladipo, okay, I just said he was number three. On a team that's competing, he's technically still a number two. So how do you pay him? How do you address that payment when the market's already inflated? You see what I'm saying? So the Pacers either need to bend to what the markets are demanding, or like you kind of said, man, Victor Oladipo's going to walk. I think Victor Oladipo's going to walk. You know what I'm saying? But before he walks, they're going to make a trade. And unfortunately, the way the Pacers do things is they'll trade Victor Oladipo. They'll bring in a guy that's maybe a developmental guy, fringe all-star, you know what I mean, like a Marcus Smart. But you don't have to pay Marcus Smart $30 million. You see what I'm saying? You can let Marcus Smart be your feature. I'm talking about guys like that. I'm not specifically talking about Marcus, but guys like that. I mean, Marcus Smart is a starter. Marcus Smart can potentially, you know what I'm saying, he can put up all-star type numbers, you know. But that's kind of what's going to happen.
Yeah, I was thinking like a Buddy Hield type.
Yeah, that's not what it would be like. Somebody who's going to demand between 17, 18, 19, 21, you know, something that the Pacers are comfortable with paying a person. Because, I don't know, the other side of this, man, they've been burnt on so many contracts, too. When you think about Roy Hibbert, when you think about Austin Crozier, when you think about Jamal Tinsley, they got burnt on contracts. We can go back to Steve Stepanovich. They got burnt on contracts where things didn't – where contracts were signed for big money and things didn't particularly work out. You can't necessarily keep that – I mean, but Brandon, you can't keep that as an excuse. Golden State went through years where they had they had signed bad contracts or guys got hurt with Baron Davis. That team, the influx of team, remember that team with Baron Davis and Steven Jackson – and Beedrick. The Beedrick contract was horrible. It hampered them from signing anybody for like long term. The reason why they got Steph Curry and Klay Thompson because they they get lucky and got Draymond Green because he fell to him or whatever. But the reason why they got all these elite players because they sucked for so long, right? So I don't know, man. The Pacers, Vic is a homegrown. I mean, I know I understand like what you kind of saying, like your position, like how you. I mean, Vic. Kind of said like, man, this, you know what I'm saying, you kind of hulked up and said you put the city in your back and like you believe you wanted to be ingrained and part of the community. And then the good thing is, Brandon, that he is going down there with the team. I know it drives some people crazy. They're saying, well, if he's practicing with the team, he's pulling away practice minutes from other players, man. I don't know, man. But you know what? Some of this, not necessarily what he said, what Victor Oladipo said, but what Mike Scott of the 76ers kind of said, man, he kind of boohooed about some things, and he of the mindset saying that why are we playing when we know we're not necessarily favored to win, and that's what I can't stand. That's what like the competitive thing. Like I get it. You're not going for COVID-19. I get it. If you want to support the movement, but if you're not going because you don't want to compete, then I got no life preserver I can throw you, you know.
Right.
But I don't know. Like I said, man, Vic chose it's just a difficult time to play the business side of it, man, and that's what he's kind of looking at if he was to stay with them. That's what I would think that the Pacers would offer him, man, something in the $30 million average range. And I don't think, like I said, they don't feel comfortable with him being a limited player. Like I said, he's an all-star. I don't want nobody to say that. Like I said, he's not a number one. He's not a real number two, and he's really a number three, right? He's an all-star.
No, I think you got it right on the head.
Well, yeah, right. He's an all-star. So, because like there's number threes all over the history of the NBA. There's been all-stars. I mean, if I think about Kevin McHale, however you think about him, Robert Parrish, or however you think about Tony Parker,
he could be a number four.
Right. So,
I'm just thinking Miami Heat, Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, and Chris Bosh, and then it'd be Victor Oladipo, which fills that Ray Allen void. Kind of while Ray Allen was the fourth when he could have been.
Right.
He was a one on a team, Milwaukee, but he wasn't. You know that kind of
right
style.
So this is what he's playing a numbers game. I can't knock him for that. I don't know, man. He doesn't want to go out there and look piss poor. Pardon my French, because then nobody will pay him $30 million. If you go out there and average 11 points a game, you're not going to get a $30 million contract. So again, he's kind of, you know what, Brandon? Not to ramble on about it. Think about the mighty IT, and now he played on a hurt hip. Now Victor's not playing on a hurt hip, but he is playing on a surgery repaired knee. Right. So that's kind of what the territory we're in with Victor Oladipo. It does hurt as a fan, but when you look at it, you know what I'm saying, from the athlete standpoint, I kind of understand.
Well, here's another thing I was thinking: is there a chance it could go completely the other way and he stay with Indiana? Absolutely. There's plenty of time for that. I think he's more open for that than what Paul George was. I think Victor can be more to the system than what Paul George was. But also, you know, there's tweets out there from some Pacers insiders that, you know, and I put on the website in the blog, you know, at one point And the extension talk between the club and Oladipo, the idea was 4-year extension, around $80 million was broached. Discussions for extension didn't progress much from there. And then there's some tweets today from one of the Pacers insider. McMillan admits that he found out Oladipo's decision, as everyone else did. This was Victor's call. And he goes, read between the lines. I have no sources on this. AJ, just understand the chain of communication has been weird, and there are plenty of dots to connect between him and Miami, i.e. cap space, Dwayne Wade, where he rehabbed, and is part owner of the gym, and their rumored interest in him. So, Pat Riley, we talked about this a year ago. I thought that Pat Riley had one or two chambers left, or bullets left in the chamber.
Right.
And this is such a Pat Riley thing, going after him and then getting Giannis, possibly. Whew. Giannis is not staying in Milwaukee. It's not going to happen.
Pat Riley, right. Well, he's saying all the right things though, Brandon. He's saying he wants to stay. He's saying he wants to sign the Supermax. So like again, man, they're throwing. We're gonna talk about it a little bit later. They're throwing $500 million at one guy. They're potentially throwing $275 million at Giannis, man. Or bet on yourself like Kevin Durant did and go sign a two-year deal with a team that's on the cusp of getting ready to win a championship. I don't know, man. I heard the same rumors, man, about him going to Golden State or about them wanting him. I just don't see him fitting with that bunch because that bunch kind of grew together and he would just be, you know, it'd be Kevin Durant all over again, man. Because all right, man, we just used him and he's like, hey, I'm using you too. And then he, you know, unless he really wants to be there, but the Golden State thing, that's not Pat Riley. Pat Riley is the more like how things used to be. And like, man, like I said, he has a plan of like what he got one more push. Danny Ainge had enough of time. Danny Ainge and the Boston Celtics have enough of time, and you know what I'm saying, and Joel Embiid and whatever, you know what I'm saying, the mess they've made of Philadelphia by taking all their shooters away and making them all 7-footers and 6-foot-11 guys with Al Horford and Embiid playing together has stunted the growth. So, you know what I'm saying, Pat Riley is coming up, you know what I'm saying, his contracts are shed, you know what I'm saying, the some of those bad contracts that he's had. On the books or whatnot, you know what I'm saying? He's got some bright young rookies and second year players, Bam Adebayo and Nunn and Hero, that I don't know if everybody will be there, but if they have to move those pieces, there's no team that wouldn't take Bam Adebayo. You see what I'm saying? There's no team that wouldn't take Hero with what he was doing. You know what I'm saying? So sharks in the water with Pat Riley, unfortunately.
Let me ask you this, John. If you're the Pacers management, so put your Pacers team management hat on. With Victor Oladipo, this offseason you're going to have, looks like it's going to be a pretty short offseason, maybe 2 months or so. So you're going to get your draft in, you're going to get your free agency all in there, and then your next season is going to start shortened next season. So with Victor Oladipo, do you try to, I got two options for you, three really. Option A is, do you try to trade Victor Oladipo during this offseason here, if you can get out of him that he doesn't want to sign, and then possibly get a draft? Because right now the Pacers have no draft picks in this year's draft. No draft picks. They've traded them all away. It was part of the Brogdon deal. So there's no draft pick. Or B, do you start playing next season, go into the trade deadline, and then get rid of him and get an asset? But you could have got an asset for this past draft, which you're not going to have one. Or C, do you go through this free agency and not have a draft pick? You go past the deadline, and either, hey, when it comes to free agency, you drop the Brinks truck and say, hey, you know, sign with us, or we're all in or we're all out. We find out on free agency July 1 or whatever. Which of those three do you do if you're the Pacers?
You drop the Brinks truck, man. But you better come with that plan B. Plan B for me, honestly, Brandon, would you trade him in the upcoming draft. With this consolation, man, I need to get future considerations for 2023 and 2024. I like these guys in this particular draft, but 2023 and 2024, it's going to be a different type of draft.
I'm not a fan on this draft coming. I'm not a fan of it.
But this particular draft with the players that's in between with Lonzo, you know what I'm saying, the brothers, because, you know, he's probably the best player. LaMelo, he's probably the best player.
Right.
Because from a wing standpoint, shoots better than his brother, passes just like his brother, kind of got some of the same awkward athleticness, you know what I'm saying, kind of being able to finish around the rim just like his brother. Like I said, he shoots with a little bit. A little bit better distance, man. But you know, do you want to deal with that distraction if you're trying to build a team of contenders, not entertainment? Because that's kind of what, you know what I'm saying, the Ball brothers are right now. The Ball family is entertainers. But he's probably like one or two. The Edwards kid, he's probably definitely top five. Somebody that developed 2 or 3 years down the road, man, this kid might be Joe Johnson. And we know how good and lethal Joe Johnson is. Hell, he's still playing.
Well, he also could be Anthony Bennett.
Not the average kid. You can kind of look at if the empty wins that he had at Georgia, but he didn't have empty stats, man. He had a lot of monster games down in Georgia in his first year. But I don't know, Tom Crean and one and done, you know, I don't know why. I don't even know why he, you know, attempted that formula. That's not necessarily his thing, but, you know. The report got him to being like Ray Allen, man. When I first saw him, I was like, man, this kid ain't Ray Allen. He can shoot, but he can't shoot like Ray Allen can shoot. You know what I'm saying? But he can.
Right.
He does have a nice little mid-range game on him, and he can't finish at the rim. And it can look like if he committed to defense, that he could be a style defensive player. But like I said, man, and then the Wiseman kid, man, is not a lot of tape on, and he kind of, you know what I'm saying, either, you know, so you have, you look at it, either quit on Memphis or Memphis quit on him, or, you know what I'm saying, whatever. But he's very athletic, very explosive. It's very raw. So again, those are some of the guys that'll be, you know what I'm saying, and then there's OB. Obi, the kid from Dayton, and he's probably the most pro, right, pro body ready. But again, he's only like 20, 21 years old. So there's some bright points in this draft, but like nobody, all developmental guys, like 2-3 years down the road, you'd be like, oh, that guy from the 2020 draft, remember him? Yeah, that's kind of what it'll be for 2020 in this draft.
Okay, perfect. Sounds good. Let's shift gears before we get Coach Mawat on. Let's talk a little PGA mm-hmm. golf.
Yep.
Just had the recent tournament, the Rocket Mortgage Classic in Detroit. Bryson DeChambeau gets the win, came back. Didn't play well the first 2 days, but then ended up pouring it on Saturday and Sunday to mm-hmm. get the win. John, I watched this tournament again. I watched all 4 days, a little bit of it. I didn't watch much of it Saturday on July 4th. I was watching some of the other things, but I was Sunday I was watching the entire round as well as the Brickyard with it, going back and forth. But, yeah, Bryson mm-hmm. averaging 360-some yards per drive, which is just beasting it down the fairways. The guy's going to be good, but he's so young and he's so mental, John, that
mm-hmm.
any little thing sets him off. So, for instance, I don't know if you saw this weekend, he got pissed at a camera guy for filming him, doing his job and filming him after his shot, saying that it hurts his brand and his image for you to catch him in his weakest point. Hello?
Oh, wow.
That's what they watch professional athletes for, is to see them do things that we do, how they react to it. Watch them do a meltdown when you hit 3 shots into the water and you're melting down like we do. Like Bryson, he wants all the, hey, put the cameras on me, but once I hit a bad shot, take them off. I don't record anymore. So he got in the report in the cameraman's face regarding all that. So there was a big blow up, and then he ended up doing this half-hearted apology Sunday evening. On his plane on the way home. It's easier to do that when you have the trophy in your hand, you know. Oh, I'm sorry,
right,
you know, like this. But no, Bryson, he's a good player. John, this is the type of guy, and I don't know if you probably didn't know this about golf, but your clubs are obviously different sizes, right? So your driver's
right.
bigger, your putter's probably one of the smaller clubs. Well, he's the first guy on the tour to actually have all his clubs the same size. He has every single club the same size. And there's like some kind of sports science that he believes in that makes it a lot easier
right.
for him.
Right. There's a debate
yep.
about that. So is this some type of you think this is going to catch on where guys are going to be adapting what he's doing?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I haven't tried it. I've done the same mm-hmm. precise grips on clubs before. And
mm-hmm.
And like do the supersized grip, and it's worked. But I don't know. I don't think there's enough evidence. I don't think enough people have tried it. And right now, it's more whatever works and fits for athletes. These guys that go on tour is probably going to work best for them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one thing with him. But he, yeah. And by the way, shout out Kevin Kisner. I had money on Kevin Kisner to finish in the top 10, and he finished second. He was rolling on Friday and Saturday. Or Friday and Sunday, so he just had a bad Saturday. But Kevin Kisner, another good one. This week, John, we're at the Memorial. There's a Workday Charity Open that's playing this week, and then next weekend is the Memorial. That's the one we'll probably see Tiger Woods at, hosted
mm-hmm.
by Jack Nicklaus. Same place in Dublin, Ohio next week. John, I had tickets. You know, I told you I had tickets for the practice round, so I was going to go with my dad. They just announced the PGA did last a couple days ago. No fans now, so I will be getting a refund for those tickets.
There you go.
So the PGA, no fans in Ohio, but they're going there this week and next week. Pretty good field too, John. Pretty good field. You got about 22 of the top 30 golfers in the world this week at this charity open
they're
going to play in it. And
the names that keep popping up for winning the Workday in my wheelhouse were Cantley and Champ. And I know Champ had the controversy a couple weeks ago where he had to sit out a tournament or whatever because he tested positive, then he didn't test positive or whatever. So I think he's kind of chomping at the bit to win this tournament. But those are, like I said, those are two names that's kind of popping in my wheelhouse, Patrick Cantley and the Champ kid.
Yeah, Cantley's played pretty well so far this year. He's definitely due for a PGA Tour win. A couple names, John, I think I'm going to look at this weekend. You know, I mentioned last week Bryson DeChambeau. As one, but I like Brooks Koepka. this week. He was out last week due to the his caddy having the coronavirus. So Brooks coming back. It's a kind of a prep match for him going into the Memorial, which is a little more of a bigger tournament. So I'm looking at Brooks possibly leading the way there. And you know, my boy Jordan Spieth. Spieth's got to be turning on. He showed phases of life so far this season. And you know, he hasn't won since 2016. He's had a few second-place finishes, but between Brooks, Spieth, and then I'm going to throw Ricky Fowler. Fowler's played good golf ever since the comeback from COVID, so we'll see. Those are my top three guys I like this week, and we'll see. So golf continues to dominate. By the way, the PGA ratings, again, were astonishing this week. So they led the way. I think it was them on Sunday, and them and NASCAR, I think, were the top two on Sunday on everybody's TVs. So, but more to come for that. So,
yep.
All right, John, we've got our guest on. I don't want to leave her waiting any longer. I'd like to welcome right now the head coach of the women's golf team, Catherine Mawat. Coach, how are you?
Hello, I'm doing very well. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. How is your summer going so far?
It's going, you know, every day is kind of a new adventure, but we're figuring things out and making the most of it. And just thankful we got through homeschooling.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I can imagine a lot of parents are happy to hear that school's hopefully going to be starting back up to get the kids in.
Yeah. My daughters are so excited to get back to school, and it's, you know, challenging, of course. They just want to see their friends, but you know, no, we have a plan to get back, but I think, you know, we still have to operate as if we still don't know exactly how things are going to shake out these next few weeks.
Coach Mawat, Jonathan Birdsong, how are you?
Hey, Jonathan. I'm great, thank you. How are you doing?
Doing just fine. It's finally, you know, saying, rather, you know, saying, I know you've been texting back and forth. I know we haven't really actually talked. So
yeah.
I did. It's great to actually have you on and whatnot. Me and Brandon, our show kind of is dominated by basketball and football. You know what I'm saying? So when we actually have to, you know what I'm saying, have somebody on here, and we're know-it-alls in that particular, those two particular genres, right? So when we have somebody on that's actually a two-time, you know, MAC Coach of the Year, man, we kind of get giddy. So, but the thing about it is, like, in the basketball world, the football world, nobody, they would remind you. You know what I'm saying? That you, they were, people were constantly reminding you. So my first question for you is, I don't, when you won it the first time, when you won MAC Coach of the Year the first time, how special was it? How special was it for you? And then the second time, like, you know, what was that experience like?
So yeah, you're taking me back a few years. This is fun. The first time, so our conference in Mid-American Conference for Women's Golf we're kind of unique. We have 10 teams currently. It's such a fun conference, just a wonderful group of coaches and athletes, and I just couldn't be happier to be part of this conference. In fact, I don't know how many conference coaches can say we had every 2 weeks we had a Zoom call over quarantine, and just all the coaches got together, had a little happy hour, and talked about things that were going on. So just a really tight group, and we're all, you know, supportive of each other. And a lot of us have been in this conference for many years. But what makes it unique is we have a very strong front runner in our conference. Kent State has won 20 consecutive Mid-American Conference titles. So
wow.
there's been a league for women's golf. MAC championships have been existing for 20 years, and Kent has won 20 of 20. So when it comes to the big awards, like, you know, the champion and the individual medalist and coach of the year and player of the year and freshman of the year, it's usually quite dominated. So when I first got that award, it would have been 2010, and I certainly had a talented team, and we played well during conference and had a lot of highlights throughout the year. So that was certainly an incredible honor, the first time that award came my way, and I guess a decade ago now.
Okay. When did you start golfing?
I started when I was about 12. I grew up in Canada, so you know, my other favorite sport is hockey, and I was on skates by the time I was 7 years old and playing with the boys. So I played a lot of hockey for for years. I still do a little bit at a team out of Indianapolis here, but golf was a little later, 12 when I started, and about 15 when I started competing, and then was fortunate to move to the U.S. and play collegiately.
Okay, and I do understand you played collegiately at the University of Louisville. How does one get recruited to play golf in the first place?
Well, back in my day, it was VHS tapes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
A big pile of them in my dining room table, and a whole bunch of big brown envelopes. That was recruiting in the 90s. But when I played and when I was, you know, growing up in Canada, I mean, it's crazy to think how small my resume was in terms of golf tournaments. I mean, the season's like 3 months long, and I didn't travel a lot to play golf. So there were just, you know, three major tournaments a summer. That was really it. So my resume was kind of bulked up by other athletic accomplishments and community service and academic accolades. And so, you know, that's 20 years ago. And it's hard for me to imagine looking at a resume as sparse as mine today, because it's so much more year round and the opportunities are so much greater for females coming up in the game.
Okay. Now, when you're on call with us, here's the deal, Coach. I'm sorry, Brandon. Brandon's a little bit. Brandon's he plays golf. He's an average. You know, he plays golf pretty regularly, and it's a very much of a learning experience for me. Okay.
Okay.
So, when you were learning, and actually, Austin, when you're coaching, how does the terrain and being and dealing with all the factors of the environment, how does that all kind of play out? Because like I said, I learned, we went out, Brandon finally took me golfing a couple weeks ago, and I walked away with a great appreciation. And like I said, I play pickup basketball, you know what I'm saying? Every now and then. But like I said, there's nothing like, you know what I'm saying, shooting, trying to get a golf ball and having to deal with, you know what I'm saying, the sun and the grass and the wind and everything. So like I said, how did you approach those things from your personally, and then like, how do you kind of coach around those things?
Sure. Well, yes, I certainly have a lot of respect for the game of golf. I was very athletic growing up, and a lot of sports came pretty easy to me. And golf was just such a big challenge, and I wasn't very good at it right away like I was at, you know, hockey, basketball, soccer. You know, those sports I could just kind of show up and score a few goals or points, and then in golf it was, you know, every third shot was good, and it was challenging. So the learning curve was great, and certainly as a coach, I have tremendous respect for the game. Some of my athletes, the way they hit the ball, the way they swing, their club head speed, their touch around the greens, their ability to execute shots, like it blows me away. And I love being awed and amazed by them. Cause it's hard. It's a very challenging mm-hmm. game, and there's so much that's out of your control. And we have to talk about those factors a lot and the weather and the outside conditions that you don't control and just your ability to adapt in the moment and execute a shot and commit to a plan. Those are things that you're, you know, always working on, always trying to fine tune as a competitive golfer.
Okay.
Nice.
How much time do college players spend on their game?
How much time?
Yeah.
A lot. And when we're in season and our window is like, you know, a 3 hour practice a day, it often doesn't mm-hmm. feel like enough. And so I have to remind mm-hmm. them, you know, because we're busy. Like we go to a tournament, it's 4 or 5 days. And, you know, they come from class and they practice and then they leave practice to go study or to take an exam or to do some tutoring or to, you know, eat food. And sometimes they feel like they're not getting enough reps in. So I have to remind them, like, you know, with today, with the hours that you had, this was enough. You know, your attention to detail was there, your execution was there, you practiced with a purpose, it's enough. So we can shut it down for today and we get up tomorrow mm-hmm. and make the most out of tomorrow, because it's very demanding. And you know, in a perfect world, some golfers, well, at the professional level, it's their job. They don't leave the practice facility when they're not competing. I mean, it's all day, every day that they're fine-tuning their games.
Okay. So, besides scores, what other things do college coaches kind of look at or critique when we look at players?
Oh, composure on the course is huge. It doesn't take me long watching a junior to determine if she's actually enjoying the game, if she's enjoying being out there, enjoying the competition, enjoying her playing partners, kind of appreciating the opportunity. I mean, you can, you know, the athletes who get really upset and angry, I try to look the other way because, you know, that's just, it's hard to unteach that. And you know, if you're going to be tense and upset and angry and, you know, don't really want that on as part of my program. So, looking for those athletes who have a really good disposition, who can move on from a bad break or a bad shot and be in the moment and focus on the coming shot.
Okay. Brent?
Absolutely.
Yeah, Coach, so I just seen recently on the website you had five ladies named to WGCA All-American Scholars list. You know, by looking at the team and reading all these past articles about how great the girls are at golf, but also scholastically, they are big scholars. Team GPAs are high every year. Kind of talk about that, how when you go into recruiting for the athlete side, but also how important it is for the student side of it.
Yeah, definitely. It's critical. We take great pride in their academic achievement. And obviously I have nothing to do with that. You know, just like every great score they shoot, I don't hit any of those shots, but we certainly, we're always just as pumped and as proud to post a headline that honors them in the classroom as much as, you know, a trophy we take home from a tournament. But it, you know, in some ways it comes with the territory with golfers. If I'm looking for the best golfer who's also the best student, who's also a great person and team player, like, to be honest, they're easy to come by. You know, it's you don't find very many high achieving golfers who really struggle in the classroom. So when you have all those characteristics, you know, checking all the boxes is what I say to a lot of these recruits. It's such a win-win because there's the golf scholarship and then there's also academic scholarship. And if you can dip into both and you know, turns out to be a nice package for you, well, then it also helps me. It helps my scholarship dollars go farther. So it pays off, you know, pun intended, for me to recruit the smartest golfers possible.
Well, myself and Jonathan are big Ball State alums from a few years ago. But how important is when you go out on the recruiting trail to, like, you guys got the new Earl Yestingmeyer Golf Center, to pitch that to these student athletes? So listen, in these Indiana winters, we've got a whole facility for you to work on your short game, your putting, your driving. How important is that when you go on recruiting trips?
It's incredibly important. And, you know, I wonder how we sold recruits with our facilities prior to. We've always had a place to hit balls in the winter. A great service for us. But having our own facility, I've been recruiting kids from several countries, like Austria, Australia, are two, for example. And when they say, "I've seen your facility, it looks incredible." You know, it's very appealing. And then of course, campus is just beautiful. And I hope you guys have been here in the past couple of years. It keeps changing. It gets prettier by the day.
Well, definitely. We're going to get up there soon. We've got, we got to take Jonathan. We had Coach Fleck on a couple weeks ago and, we've got to work on Jonathan's golf swing with Coach Fleck coming up. So,
But it
comes to my next
help.
Question. Yeah. So, Coach, during this, I guess, pandemic that we've had, and your guys' season just kind of halted, getting stopped completely, how has communication gone with the team since the stoppage of play back in early March?
We've communicated quite regularly, and especially in the beginning. We met weekly as a team, and then they had a second meeting every week with our sports psychologist contact. I know that was really helpful for them, just to voice some of their concerns. I had them fill out some little surveys and questionnaires just to report, you know, how are you feeling? How much sleep have you been getting? What are some of the emotions you've experienced? Because it's just different for everybody, and I've got athletes all over the world, different time zones and different climates and different closings and openings and quarantine situations. I think it was really healthy and helpful for them to be able to kind of voice how they were feeling. And then as things started to open up, golf courses have been open for a couple of months now, and a lot of my athletes work at golf courses, so that's been really helpful for them. They've been, you know, masked and working at golf courses for, their normal hours, several shifts a week, and then practicing and playing and competing. So as things opened up and they became more busy, we frequently text and we'll be on Zoom every couple of weeks now, as opposed to a couple times a week.
Okay. You've spent 16 seasons at Ball State. What drew you there initially when you first came there?
So when I graduated from Louisville, I didn't even intend to coach golf. I was scheduled to be in grad school at Louisville, and then I got an email from a friend of mine who was 23 years old, and I was also 23 years old, and she said, "Hey, I just became the head coach at the University of Mississippi." And which, you know, think about that, a 23-year-old head coach in the SEC. She said, "Do you want to be my assistant?" And I remember, like, my jaw dropped. I thought, this is crazy. And I knew I was going to say yes. And 12 days later, I was driving a U-Haul to Mississippi, in a state I had never been to previously. Like, and I looked up, I think she said she was coaching at Ole Miss. So I looked up Ole Miss, and then on my, you know, on the internet, it came up as University of Mississippi, and I was so confused. I didn't even know it was, I didn't know it was the same school. So that's how foreign the South and Mississippi was to me. But I spent 3 years there and learned so much from Megan, who is a several time USGA champion and remains a good friend. And then I got my master's degree, so I felt like, well, I'm, you know, ready to move on. Because my salary wasn't really enough to sustain there when I was getting school paid for, it was perfect. But beyond that, I needed to make a little more of a living. Certainly that's not the case as an assistant in the SEC today. So as I was looking for jobs, there was one job open, and it was at Ball State. And here I was again, not knowing where this school was. I remember I'm just a Canadian kid. And I applied to one job and I interviewed, and this is the one that I got. And it's, I never would have imagined at 26 years old that this would kind of decorate or be the story of my career, you know, all these years later, but it is, and I couldn't be more thankful.
Awesome. Yeah, that's interesting. I can imagine being like, yeah, how much you come down here? What?
Brent, I got
Jonathan,
you alluded to playing a multiple sports as a youth. Is that something that's important right now as an athlete, or should aspiring golfer just kind of focus on golf?
I love recruiting athletes. I feel like it's just because I can relate to them. I mean, we have made, I'll be standing on a putting green talking about a drill and referencing like the game of soccer and having a free kick. I love athletes because they've been in the team environment. They know what it's like to pick up a teammate, to support a teammate, to rally for a teammate, to, be in pressure situations, to win together, lose together. And, in golf, there's a high school season, but that's just kind of a blip on the career of a lot of juniors. So for the most part, it's very individual. So, if they're some golfers are just missing altogether that team and competitive environment. And that doesn't mean I don't recruit somebody who hasn't been in that scenario, but it's certainly something that I can relate to more as a person than as a coach. And I think there's so many incredible qualities that are brought into your world if you've experienced some of those team sports, even at a young age, even at an intermediate type level. I get a lot of joy coaching those golfers who have participated in athletics and other sports.
Okay. Brandon, you got one more?
Coach, I've got three easy questions. These are lighthearted questions.
Okay.
For I do it to every guest we get. Number one is where'd I have it? I had it written down. Where'd it go? Oh, have you had a hole-in-one yourself, or can you tell me a story where you've been in a group or somebody in your group's got a hole-in-one?
Well, I've seen probably 12. I've seen a lot.
Wow.
And they come in clusters, and it's been a while, so I'm due to see some more. I've been witness to several. I've had one legitimate hole-in-one, and it was a qualifying round with teammates when I was a freshman, and then I had one that didn't quite count. It was pouring rain. I was playing in the Ontario Amateur, and coincidentally, it was 2 months prior to the only legitimate hole-in-one I've had. And so, pouring rain, I just kind of lose my grip, and ball goes into the woods. So I re-tee, I grip as hard as I can, and I, the ball lands on the green, one hop, and dunks in the hole. So that's one way to make a par.
Yeah.
But, that's my hole-in-one story.
Follow-up question. A buddy of mine, we tease him about this. He got a hole-in-one on a par 3 executive course. We tease him that it does not count. Should it count or should it not count?
I mean, I think it counts. If there's a scorecard and, every...
I mean, but it's not a real course.
Signed and attested. so then...
We tease him and say, tell us about the course. He's like, well, it's a par 3.
I'd tease my friend, too. I'd probably give myself a hard time having to declare that, but it's worth mentioning under the topic of hole-in-one.
Last two. What are some of your personal favorite courses you like to play personally?
I played Glen Abbey growing up a little bit, and I watched a lot of golf there, the Canadian Open. And back in the day when the DeMaurier, that cigarette company
mm-hmm.
that sponsored professional golf tournaments, I watched a lot of golf there as a youngster, and I got to play it a few times. And I just remember being in awe, like shaking hands with Michelle McGann and seeing some of the greats, men and women. So playing there was a true treat. And then I took my team out to Hawaii 3 years ago, and I honestly didn't even play while I was out there, but just being at a course in Hawaii coastal, it was, I've never seen anything as beautiful.
Yeah. Wow, I can imagine. I've seen some of them on the internet or on TV when they play out there in the PGAs, and it's definitely breathtaking. Final one.
Yeah.
I told Jonathan, we were talking about this earlier when the first show first came on. I bet if I get you and Coach Fleck out there to play one-on-one, I bet you'd beat him in match play. Am I right?
In match play? I think it'd probably be a good match.
Absolutely, I think it'd be great.
I told him,
but
I told him, don't start no trouble, man. Please, this is a Ball State alumni
know, right?
show. You know,
Absolutely.
What I'm saying, don't start no trouble.
But Coach, I do want to thank you for joining us today. It was great to have you on. We're definitely gonna be coming up to the campus here soon once kind of things settle down once again, and we definitely want to come see you guys, spotlight you guys, and check you guys out this season.
Thank you. Yeah, we'd love to have you in the facility and introduce you to our teams and show you around campus. It'd be an honor to have you alums back in Muncie.
Perfect. Jonathan, anything last?
Coach, as the NHL is getting ready to kick back up, do you have a favorite NHL team?
Oh, the Maple Leafs, all the way.
Maple Leafs.
Yep.
All right.
Jonathan Tavares.
That's right.
Absolutely. All right, Coach. Well, have a good luck the rest of the summer, and we'll see you. We'll see you this fall. Okay.
Sounds good. Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That's Coach Mawat, Ball State Women's Golf. John, another great interview with Coach. Very, very informative. I thought that was crazy, the story about how she got to Ball State. You know, hey, we'll go down to Mississippi. And then, guess what? Changing course, going to Ball State.
you got to have the resume to get the job. And like I said, she's done real well with the job. Like I said, two-time MAC Coach of the Year, amongst the other titles and tournament titles that program has, man. So, yeah, I'm glad we got her on, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Ball State University Athletic Department, for the connection there. It's great to connect with the Ball State program, and always a joy to talk to fellow Cardinals as well. So, all right, John, let's jump over to NASCAR/IndyCar. So NASCAR this past week was at Indianapolis. We had the Indy Grand Prix on Saturday. Then we had the road course Xfinity race. And then we had the Brickyard 400. It was tested early. Jimmy Johnson tested positive for COVID. So Jimmy Johnson, the four-time winner at Indy, just behind Jeff Gordon, who's won five times, couldn't compete. Huge news, but it is announced today that he is back this weekend in Kentucky, which is great to see him back. But Scott Dixon went on. Initially, wasn't looking so good in practice and qualifying in Indy Grand Prix. Scott Dixon, who won earlier this year in Texas already a month ago, goes out, makes it 2-for-2, gets the Indy Grand Prix win. And I had a funny bet with Scott Dixon. I put a $5 bet on there to win $30 on Scott Dixon. Right before the race, I went in, didn't think I put the bet, so I made it again. So I made that bet twice. So I paid off two winnings on that one.
Yeah, man. Scott Dixon ran a controlled race, man. No real challenge except for Will Power, who's kind of falling out there in the pits. But, yeah, man, Scott Dixon. Brandon, fun fact, man. I know you usually like throw them at me. I'm going to throw them at you, man. Fun fact, the last couple winners of the Grand Prix have gone on to win the Indianapolis 500. So maybe Scott Dixon, maybe you need to put that money on Scott Dixon come a little later on this year when they have the 500.
Yeah, absolutely. Dixon would be a good choice. You know, he's also won the championship. I mentioned after that Texas race, whoever's won that Texas race has won the championship. Scott Dixon's won that Texas race three times. All three times he won it, he won the championship. So Dixon is a guy to look at. Moving forward, and the odds for the Indianapolis 500 win just came out recently. Scott Dixon right now is the second best odds to win at +450. So,
yep,
keep an eye on that. The other race, the Xfinity Road Course race, the NASCAR Xfinity cars normally did the oval. This year they decided to change it up, go road course, and it was a hit, John, a massive hit, which was great. Chase Briscoe, Indiana's own from Mitchell, Indiana, down south, wins the race. Went off the course, had to get back on, and still came back and beat Austin Cindric and A.J. Allmendinger. John, I loved the road course in the Xfinity. Loved it.
What's going to happen the more and more races that open up? You know what I'm saying? With Roger Penske, Brian IMS, man, what's going to happen now, man? Imagine when we get people out there. How crazy is it going to be with racing? If it wasn't for snow and sleet that we have here in Indianapolis, unpredictable weather like that, we'd have races every year round.
I'm not a big road course guy either. I'm not a big road course guy. I'm more of an oval type of guy. But this road course race, I really, really liked. And I'm going to go ahead and say it now. As much as I love tradition, I think the Brickyard 400 next year, I think they move it off the oval. I think they go to the road course next year. And I know that's going to piss some traditionalists off. But if you had high ratings for the road course,
watch,
and everybody loves it.
Well, they watched it this year because it actually had a pretty good
race. They watched it this year. They did.
But in years past, man, I don't know, Brandon. I yield to your, you know what I'm saying, you know him a little bit more than me. But, like, man, it was almost kind of like the race that everybody forgot.
Right. Well, people complain because they're like, oh, well, if you do it then, you have to change the name of it. It can't be the Brickyard because everybody thinks of the Brickyard, you're doing the four-corner oval track. So you have to change the name to something, which, okay, if you have to do that, then do it. Maybe you put both races on there. If I'm Roger Penske, I maybe do both. Why not? Daytona this year. They just announced today Daytona. They're going to do the road course on Daytona in August, 2 weeks before the regular season finale, which is the Coke 400 at night in Daytona on the big track. They usually have a July 4th weekend. Well, this year it got moved to the end of the regular season, and the Brickyard got moved here. I think next year you have the Brickyard and you have the road course, and you spread them out during the season. That facility, it gets used, John, but there's so much more use that facility could use.
Right.
And if he's pumping money into it, you got to think you're getting as much use as you can. So.
Right. You're correct. Totally right.
So, Brickyard 400 wise, what a race. That was actually, it was such a good race, unlike some others that we've seen in the past. A lot of tire issues still, though. So, Goodyear's got to look at those tires because there was a lot of tires blowing up and people with some violent wrecks. How about Denny Hamlin? Denny Hamlin, Kevin Harvick, the top two guys. And, John, we talked about them as favorites.
Yeah,
I said Denny Hamlin's – yeah, you talked about Denny Hamlin. I talked about Kevin Harvick as being the favorite. Hamlin had it wrapped up, I felt like, John. And seven laps to go, he puts it in the wall in turn one, ruining his day. And then Kevin Harvick drove to a victory lane, his third Brickyard and second back-to-back.
Yeah, I think Harvick and Hamlin are kind of trading victories right now. I know they lead in victories, it's about their drivers, and it's about their pit crew, and they got the two best pit crews in NASCAR right now. Hamlin after the race wasn't necessarily happy, but wasn't necessarily dejected either. I think you know, these guys are prime time competitors, man. Drivers don't really do a whole heck of a lot of talking till like after the race,
right?
And even then, it's still not a lot, right? But like I said, these guys are ultra competitive. Kevin Harvick won the race, and it was in dramatic fashion. Brandon, I can't. You got me talking about racing of all things, right?
I was about to ask you, how much did you watch of it?
So watch, dude. You kind of like, it's easy to turn on. You turn it on and just kind of watch it till it's over, man. You know, So yeah, I watched it. I mean, I ain't saying I'm the one, you know what I'm saying, to help them with the ratings or whatnot, but it's a racing town, man. How could you? And like I said, they're you know, NASCAR from the movement standpoint is trying to advance, and like I said, man, like, how can you not try to support it? Not saying I got a favorite driver or anything like that, but you know what I'm saying, you check, as you and I kind of engage about it, I learn about the Denny Hamlins of the world and the Kevin Harvicks more and more about them. You know what I'm saying? And then hell, our homie Wallace finished ninth. So again, man, you know, just like I said, you know, Roger Penske. There's nothing wrong with, as long as there's not a lot of breakdowns with vehicles or accident, or accidents or whatnot. I don't have no problem with there being more racing. I really don't. Speedway or anywhere else.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt Kenseth, another guy, John. This guy was racing in the early 2000s in NASCAR. After his contract was up, I think in 2011 or 12, he won a title before. So he's won a championship. He quit, left, been out of the sport for 8 years now. And then once the Kyle Larson did his thing on the stream with the racist comments he made, they fired him. They hired Matt Kenseth. He finished a best third place in the race on Sunday. I thought it was a great performance by Kenseth. I thought he did really well. The surprise for me still, my guy Chase Elliott had a bad pit stop. I don't know why they pitted when he did, but Kyle Busch, John, you're going to learn is the most hated villain in NASCAR. People hate Kyle Busch because he wins a lot. He wins all the time, and then he always rubs it in people's faces, and if somebody wrecks him, he gets all animated and such. But he has zero wins still this year. This is the longest it's been. Kyle Busch has not had a win so far. There are 10 races left in the regular season before the playoffs start. So the races are counting down. Michigan, they're going to go to twice on back-to-back here at the end of July, I believe. We have Kentucky this week. So we just go right down I-65 this week. They're in Kentucky. I think it's going to be another great race. Last year, the Busch brothers, Kyle and Kurt Busch, both finished 1-2, and they were banging and hitting each other as they crossed the finish line, brothers. And they were pissed off at each other afterwards that the other one beat the other one. So they're going to be top contenders this week as well. So should be a good one. But Brickyard 400, I liked it. I think next year they go to the road course because it was astonishing. I loved it. So, did you see the pit road accident? My goodness. The pit guy that got smashed between two cars, those guys are athletes too, John. People don't realize, you just change a tire. Those guys got to be athletes. Some of them, like, professional football players in the past. They were professional athletes in the past. Like, these it takes a special person. I mean, that dude got smashed between two vehicles, and he still was able to lift himself out of there. Thank God he was okay.
Right. That's the second major NASCAR, man. It's a collision sport of the utmost seriousness, man. So I that's the part I don't like about that. That's the part about racing, the wrecks. Oh, man, it's horrible.
Yeah. John, let's go to NFL. How would you feel if I told you, hey, I'm going to pay you a 10-year, $500 million contract? Holy cow, Patrick Mahomes is rich.
That man's wealthy. That man ain't rich. That man's wealthy, man. Yeah, when I hit the Twitter line, you know, I thought it was a typo. I was like, no way, it's $500 million. But no, yes, it's $500 million. 12 years, Brandon. Like I said before, man. Patrick Mahomes is a special talent. He's under 25 years old, and he's already got a Super Bowl and MVP on his resume. Brandon, he falls out of bed and gets 4,000 yards. When he took over the reins from being a, you know, saying Vince just started once Alex, you know what I'm saying, went down. The first full year started, he threw 5,000 yards. So man, you can't but think that it's going to get even better as he matures. You know what I'm saying? As he matures to an even better player. The key thing with Kansas City though is it'll be how long is Andy Reid going to be? You know what I'm saying, calling the calls. Which I know I'm not a necessary believer in Andy Reid in the first place, but I know he does, you know, to make some general manager decisions as far as player movement and whatnot as well. Not full general manager decisions, but some, right? But so they also have to remember that, you know what I'm saying, you can have a $1 million quarterback back there, but you better have offensive line to make sure he stays clean, right? And you also better make sure that he has weapons to throw at as well. So, Patrick Mahomes, Brandon, I don't know if he plays out the full 12 years, you know what I'm saying, or the 10-year extension or whatnot, you know what I'm saying? After, think about it, right? If you win, he's good enough. He's good enough in that team if they get hot again to win, you know, barring injury, right, two more Super Bowls. And within the next 5 years, two more Super Bowls, right? How long do you want to play? How long do you want to play in a black and blue, in a black and blue league, you know what I mean? So, whatever guaranteed money that he's already signed with the contract, right? So, I don't know, man. It'll be fun to watch him put up even more crazier stats. But now, man, from Kansas City's point of view, man, they had to make this. Like, dude, everybody's going to look for quarterbacks next year, either through the draft or through free agency, man. Why would Kansas City even think about Mickey Mouseen the way Dallas did, has done with Dak Prescott, or the way, you know what I'm saying, Kirk Cousins did between him leaving – Washington and ended up Minnesota. Again, I'm not saying I'm telling you and everybody listening right now that Patrick Mahomes, he's in the Hall of Fame right now. After three seasons, Brandon, he's in the Hall of Fame, man. So that's crazy to have the amount of stats that he's been able to put up. They had to make sure he gets signed till delivered and not even think about going to being flirtatious with New England, being flirtatious with the Colts, or being flirtatious with any other team, they would throw the kid caboodle at him. So they threw the kid caboodle at him, man, and Patrick Mahomes is the Kansas City Chief for life.
Yeah, absolutely. By the way, Patty Mahomes, I just saw, is playing in a American Century Golf Championship this weekend. They just announced the pairings for that. John, let me just read you some of these names. I know we're on the NFL talk, but let me read you some of these pairings for these tee times. Chauncey Billups, Darren Williams, Patrick Peterson, Jerome Bettis, Eddie George, Terrell Davis, Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, Charles Barkley, Steve Young, Anthony Lynn, and Mike Vrabel, Del Curry, Steph Curry, Aaron Rodgers, Tony Romo, Larry Fitzgerald, Jerry Rice, Greg Maddux, John Smoltz, and Roger Clemens. Jimmy Rollins, Chase Utley, Shane Victorino, Larry the Cable Guy, Brian Baumgartner, who plays what's-his-face on the movie, on the TV show Office. Rob Riggle, Ray Romano. I mean, there is just there's so, Reggie Bush, Carson Palmer, Marcus Allen's like Team USC is out there. The Footy Flakes. I want to watch this golf tournament this weekend. I want to see these guys because they step up there. Sometimes they hack away.
Do they? So I ain't got nothing.
Absolutely. Anyways, exactly. Back to the NFL. Is the AFC doomed? Are we doomed with KC the rest of the time, pretty much for the next 10 years? I don't think we are.
I don't think that we are. They just had to soak him up. Again, there's other things that they factor into making a team great. And go ahead.
Patrick Mahomes has a down year this year from last year. Coming up. If they play.
A down year for Patrick Mahomes is 3,000 yards, man. I guess they'll maybe take that.
I think he'll get hurt.
Brandon. John. We shall see. The NFL, the season got to kick off first. That's one thing.
Yeah, I don't think they might not even play. I just saw today that the NFL is going to offer players, if they want to sit out the 2020 season, that they're allowed to, like they did with the NBA.
Yeah, that's the further development story, man. We shall see.
Yeah. Next NFL talk, the Redskins, John, are going to be changing their names. It's going to have no Indian thing whatsoever. The logo's going to change as well. They talked about the Red Tails as a name. They talked about Red Hawks. They talked about some other things. But looks like Washington's changing their name. The Cleveland Indians are looking at changing their name. But the Braves are not going to change theirs, and neither are the Chicago Blackhawks. What is your take, John, on these teams changing their names?
My take on it – if they even come off as anything that would come off as racist, like the Redskins does, it always has. It's just that, you know what, Brandon? There's not enough Native American people left around to complain about it. They've been annihilated. I don't want to, you know, I didn't really be a Debbie Downer, but they've been annihilated into like reservations and whatnot. So, but you know what I'm saying? So again, man, you know, them changing the name, that's great. I think it's a bit of progress.
Daniel Snyder didn't want to do it himself. Let's get that right. It was
FedEx. He buckled to the pressure of corporate America finally, and his other owners wanted to, like, you know what I'm saying, buy out of the team. But you know that, you know, when you mentioned Snyder, man, he's got bigger problems. than the name change of his particular how he runs his team though. But yeah. I commend the efforts. Yeah.
Somebody is not having a good day today. After some of their comments on Twitter that I had to go back and look at yesterday twice. I was like, what? Did he really say this? Deshaun Jackson with his anti-Semitic remarks that he made.
Yeah.
Again, think before you tweet. Is that the old motto?
Right. Think before you tweet. And if you're quoting anybody from the past, whether it be a conqueror like Sun Tzu, or even, you know what I'm saying, somebody like Louis Farrakhan, or even something from the Bible, man, somebody, there's always bound to be misinterpretation in anything.
Just don't
that,
quote Hitler.
That somebody says.
I know. Mean, that's,
then he put, then
that's
he said,
a big
then he
thing.
Says,
don't quote him. You're good.
And then Hitler didn't say it. So Deshaun Jackson comes off as an idiot, not necessarily, not to me. He doesn't come off as anti-Semitic.
Right.
He just comes off as a dumbass because you made a quote, but Hitler didn't say it. So, I don't know. He's come out and apologized. There hasn't necessarily been a cancel culture for him just yet, call for him just yet. But, he you know what I'm saying, we kind of know where it comes from. Yes, Deshaun, yes, we all want change. But, Deshaun, quote, make sure you quote the right person first.
Absolutely. Raheem Morstead, running back, 49ers, requesting a trade. Not happy with the contract.
Yeah.
This is a Super Bowl, man.
The 49ers look at him as like a product of the environment. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The 49ers look at him as running backs are expendable. You know? So he's bounced around.
They just traded Breida.
Right, they did. They traded Breida, what you thought that they traded Breida to give him more of a burn.
Right.
Right. But he's bounced around from different teams, but he's kind of settled here. But I think they think maybe that's like maybe like a light in the bottle type of like maybe that's a one-time thing. Maybe not nothing that they necessarily would want to marry long-term with was probably something he's looking for, a 3 or 4 year deal. So he asked for a trade. Can he get it this late in the game? There's still business deals and transactions that can be made, but they're not going to offer the you know what I'm saying a haul for his particular skill set.
Right. Yep, I agree with that. John, I've got news that came out today that the Ivy League has canceled the college football season. Their first conference, the cancel was the Ivy League. They are also canceled all fall sports. They will reevaluate sports play in 2021 of January. John, this is the first shoe to fall regarding fall sports in the football season. If you remember right, back in March, they were the first ones as well to cancel their conference tournaments. I think we're in trouble, as I said earlier about college football.
We know we're in trouble. And like I said, it might be time to just sit down or just play some conference games. But yeah, the Ivy League, the what I'm gonna call them nerds, but the big brains have decided to sit this one out. And like they're a league that's more about the student athlete. You know, what I mean, student first, athlete second. So they're just making precautions, trying to make it make sense. So like if you have limited. You know what I'm saying? If you don't or if you have no kids or children or whoever on campus, then like how can you have a team sport? So I understand that where that comes from.
Right, absolutely. John, big shout out. We haven't talked about them, but big day today in the world of horse racing. Today is the Indiana Derby. Out at Indiana Grand Racing and Casino, the Indiana Derby, where points for these horses get awarded for the Kentucky Derby later on this fall. The main race,
7:30 start time, I think.
Yeah, 7:45 is race 11. That's the main event race. 7:45. The first race started today at 2:20 p.m. It's been going on all day. But shout out Indiana Grand Racing and Casino and the horse racing out there, John. I just placed my bet. Recently for tonight for that race. So in about 25 minutes or so, that race will be going live. And we're going to see if we can make some little bit of money out of it. But Indiana Grand, Indiana Derby, they've rescheduled it. So two topics I got, John. TBT. Have you watched any of the TBT and what's your thoughts on it? I saw two former Hoosiers playing last night.
I watched the Mighty Men of Mackey go down in flames. It's okay. Yep. I don't know why. I guess, man, because like today I was in a couple of forums, man. The IU faithful kind of want to. They rubbed it into the Purdue. Like they consider this part of the rivalry, I guess, since they ain't Purdue got a little bit further in the tournament in the NCAA tournament. Here's the thing though, Brad. Nobody's put up not IU, not Purdue. Let's put up a banner outside of the Big Ten banner. Both of them got that right in like the last 10, 12 years, right? Nobody's put up a national championship banner, but like the slick talk I have heard from like the IU faithful about like the blowout, the men of Mackey. I don't understand the correlation, man, but I get it, man. But what they fail to forget, man, like Boeheim's Army, they're out there every year. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah,
that's like a squad that might be able to beat the Charlotte Bobcats. And I said Bobcats. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I actually bet on Purdue to win the first game and then lose the second one, and I got covered both of those bets. And Purdue didn't even have all their players. Purdue had a roster of 11 guys, and Rafael Davis could not play. There was two other players that couldn't play. One tested positive for COVID, couldn't play. So, I mean, if you look, they had a guy from IUPUI or IPFW. Indiana Purdue Fort Wayne that was playing on the team. They had a guy that was out for Coach Gary who left and went to Mercer. So a guy from Mercer came and played on the team. So they kind of had a mixed bag of players. Robbie Hummel decided not to play because he was preparing for the Olympics. And with him getting ramped back up and coming off knee injuries, he said yesterday he didn't want to play, but maybe in a couple years. So let's pump the brakes. Purdue didn't have their full squad of the alumni. I mean, if you want to put some alumni, wait till we get Caleb Swan again. Wait till we get some of those big guys out there with Haas down there and play. But last I checked, there was only two Indiana Hoosiers out there playing on some scrub team, Mo Creek, and we know how his basketball career went at IU. And I can't think of the other guys' names.
I didn't want to get them out there playing. Man. I didn't want to get you riled up.
Well,
I'm somewhere in the middle
on Twitter about it.
Yeah, I'm somewhere in the middle.
Nothing better else to do.
IU and Purdue fandom, right? And I mean, obviously, man, with Coach Brantley and being a friend of the show, right? We probably put an extra hug around Purdue, right? When we talk about them, and rightfully so, man. Shoot, they're running the best program in the state, collegially. They are. I know Archie Miller got a bunch of potential, you know, second round or first round draft picks, you know, saying on guys. He got a bunch of 4-star guys or whatever, right, that's coming in to add to what he already has down there. But I'm just talking about, like, you know, as far as like background, man, like people how they carry that TBT loss.
Right.
Chirped about it, man. I couldn't believe it. I was like, dude, this is not related to any type of rivalry that happened, at Mackey or in Bloomington. I just thought it was funny.
John, I've got a problem, and I don't know if you can be able to solve the answer for me. This weekend is the next pay-per-view for WWE, Extreme Rules.
Mm-hmm.
There is a match, John, where the stipulation is called Eye for an Eye, where to win the match, you have to, quote, extract the eye from your opponent to win. Between Seth Rollins and Rey Mysterio Jr., John. I understand certain gimmicks for matches.
Yeah.
Do they think this is actually going to go down correctly and people are going to believe this?
Brandon, we have to get Fred from KFA Connection to come on to
and they're talking
about
they're
this
making fun of AEW
a couple weeks, but yeah.
From their incident.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, though, Brandon.
Dean Ambrose.
Everybody's changing. Everybody's kind of changing and leaning towards a more disbelievable wrestling where you do, like, magic or you do, you know what I'm saying? This is how they think that the younger generation wants to view wrestling. You know what I'm saying? So there's been some guys. I've listened to interviews from Iron Anderson. I listened to an interview for Eddie Kingston from NWA. A lot of guys who like do, you know, saying they are the more traditional guys, but they are embracing the change. There's some people that are against it, like, you know, Jim Cornette, totally against it. And then some guys that in Ring of Honor, even though that's, you know what I'm saying, the underground wrestling or whatever, they're kind of against it and kind of wanting, again, man, it's one thing to have a gimmick like the Undertaker or somebody like an over top gimmick or Kane or even like Bray Wyatt, you know what I'm saying? But like a whole show of it, you know, I'm open to some of the, I watched Lucha Underground, man. That's all they did was like gimmicky magical type stuff, which, you know what I'm saying? They bring in snakes and they bring in, you know, you know, all kind of like soap opera drama stuff during that promotion time. But so like to keep, I think what Vince is doing to pull more viewership in, to pull that YouTube kind of crowd, millennial crowd, you know what I'm saying, to pull them in, man, you have to do like over the top things, kids. That's what they're kind of into. They're not into like long, drawn out programs. Where it used to be back in with Dusty Rhodes and get the Four Horsemen, and, you know what I'm saying? They're not kids are not prone to those, you know. They want instant you know, satisfaction. I'm not saying I know you kind of, you know what I'm saying, kind of cry, you know what I'm saying, griping about Extreme Rules. I kind of watched Raw the last couple weeks, man. I think their women division. Even with Becky Lynch giving up the title, their women division is still. I mean, I know it's still stereotypical, but their women division is rock solid. You know, Bayley's rock solid. I don't want to say individuals, but like I think all whoever they got the belts on and the supporting cast is rock solid when it comes to like entertainment. You know, mm-hmm.
Do you like the new United States title?
No, I can't say, man. They just need to retire it. Vince needs to retire. Nah, man. Nah,
I liked it.
I mean, it's cool. It's okay. I like the. I don't know, man. I like the old fashioned John Cena title when he was U.S. You know, that one was just like the little U.S. title, like the United States flag on it on the front. Something simple, something you know. But I get it. I get it. I thought, but here, Brandon, I thought MVP retired.
No, he's back. He's a little bigger.
Yeah, he's a little bigger. Like, I don't know, man. We're not necessarily, like I said, I've said this before, we're not necessarily a golden age of sports entertainment as it pertains to professional wrestling, but between the information, the happenings that happened between Raw and SmackDown and NXT and AEW, man, I know the ratings are kind of waffling everywhere for them, but, you know, I think wrestling is just as strong as it ever did, even with the gimmicks. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, I think wrestling is as strong as ever.
Tonight, NXT's got the Great American Bash title for title. Adam Cole and Keith Lee, they've done two finishes for this. I think Keith Lee becomes champ tonight. I think Adam Cole finally moves up. Keith Lee gets the title. It only makes sense to do that. So Keith Lee's big dude.
Yep.
By the way, John, on this day in 1990, Sting defeated the Nature Boy, Ric Flair, to become the new WCW World Heavyweight Champion at Great American Bash on this day.
The man
also
called
yesterday,
Sting.
Yesterday on this day, 24 years ago yesterday, was when Hulk Hogan finally turned heel at the Bash of the Beach. John, I know where I was at when that happened. Those are the type of moments in sports where you remember when Hulk Hogan turned heel. I was waiting for him to come down in there and help out, and then what the hell?
Right.
Do you remember it?
The whole crowd was, man. That's something that was signature with Hulk Hogan, man, coming in and doing the save. If he wasn't wrestling for the night, he'd come in and help out the other babyface who was getting overwhelmed by the bad guys or whatever. And that's kind of what was the deal in that particular match. If Craven Prong, Sting, and the Macho Man were getting laid out by the Outsiders. Hogan, the music hit. It wasn't the real American music. It was the WCW music.
Right.
It's a shadow of the real American music, but it's still Hogan comes out there. Everybody, the crowd goes crazy. Everybody pops like they do. Like it feels like Hulk Hogan's getting ready to body slam Andre the Giant. Right. People going crazy. Hulk Hogan comes out there and leg drops the wrong guy. Like high fives, you know, saying Hall and Nash. And leg drops, I do believe, Randy Savage. I do believe.
Yeah.
And like I said, the NWO was started from that day on. And then everybody, the people in the crowd were in such disbelief that they literally fan rioted and threw everything they had in their hands. Drinks, magazines, popcorn, t-shirt, whatever. They literally had an emotional swing and threw everything that they had. You know what I'm saying? Up to the ring, man. Because Hulk Hogan, like I say, for all his career, was always the good guy to come save the day, and he came and didn't save the day. He actually brought the bad guy.
Yeah, absolutely. John, that's about all I have on my thing. What do you have? You got anything left?
No, man. I want
anything you want to talk about shows?
No, man. I want to thank you for being a trooper and powering through. You know what I'm saying, your little illness, man, or whatnot. I hope it's a little illness. I hope it's not anything too serious. I know we kind of alluded to some COVID systems earlier. So, we had a real good show. I want to thank Coach Mawak for coming on and enlightening us about the program that is, like more about the Ball State Golf program as a whole. Outside of that, man, Brandon, if you got anything?
I don't. I'm going to go take some more medicine. I'm going to go back to bed. Hopefully I can fight this illness, whatever it is. I've got golf tomorrow, so I got to try to make myself better. Hopefully this isn't COVID or anything like that. I'm going to have to Hulk up for the league. Keep my distance. I'll be socially distanced from everybody. Yes, I've got these airborne. Helps your immune system.
There you go. And then tomorrow, hey, man, tomorrow you have to wear a mask. That's official.
Oh yeah, I've got my grandma is a trooper. She's given me like 10 different masks. So I've got cloth ones. I've got everything. So I've got one in my golf bag already. I've got one in my car. I got one in my book bag. So I am prepared. I am ready to roll. John, I want you to – I'm going to be messaging you this weekend. I want you to watch some of this golf out there at Muirfield and the Memorial's work field.
I'm on it, man. Like I said, I think it comes down to Champ or who else I said. I can't remember. We have to go back and look at the tape. But I think that Champ's going to win. Yeah. That's who's going. I think Champ's going to win.
I will tell you, I don't even think Champ's going to finish in the top 30.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
We
shall see. We'll see.
Absolutely.
We'll have a friendly gentleman bet to next week.
Absolutely. I do want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank Ball State Athletics for allowing us to have Coach Mawat on tonight. It was great to have her and hear talk about the women's side of golf as well. And, another well-ran show. And I'll get myself better. We'll be 100%, and we'll be at it again next week.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Crossroads Sports.